distance.
Yeah.
Was a good indicator of future reuse distance, unique reuse distance.
Okay.
So CORURD might be a good one to look at.
Which one of these should I look at?
The 2D histogram is probably going to be more informative. That's why if you look at the original one, the 1.EPS,
yeah,
you can see what I originally would see and realize that's not that informative. The 2D histogram, the darker colors are more indicative. Okay, it changes colors based on the, obviously, the amount of items that are that same coordinate. So on the x-axis, we have reverse reuse, reverse unique reuse distance, and on the y-coordinate, we have the unique reuse distance.
Okay.
So at any point that had a past and a future measurement that we could take, we plotted it onto this graph. And I originally got the one on the right and realized I have no idea how often any of these occur. So I had to try and find some way to kind of give a Z value.
Okay.
To show how often these
occurred. Yeah. And the Z value is
based on the color that you see.
And what does the color mean?
The color just shows the intensity, the
magnitude. Which color is more intense and which color is less intense?
So dark blue obviously is pretty much the default of zero. And the lighter blue, as it goes lighter at first, that's in a little bit more. Then it starts to hit the yellow, and then it starts to go towards the red, I believe, for intensity.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I see.
So green is like intermediate. Red is like
super.
Yeah, it's actually rather spread out.
What is y-axis again?
The
z-axis. Sorry.
No, it's more like the
frequency distribution.
Frequency of what?
Of how many times a page that is getting accessed has a reverse unique reuse distance
to be such
of this and forward distance of that.
Okay.
So if they all have the same x and y coordinate, if the z or the color is the frequency, the number of items with that same x and y axis.
What do you read from this plot?
I was hoping that I'd be able to read more, but it seems that for the most part, the items on the far right and the upwards appear to be less frequent, so they might just be closer to anomalies rather than regular behaviors. At least that's what I'm hoping I could look for. This is WDEV1. I have WDEVT also there, which is basically WDEV1 information gathered while having the threshold placed on the LRU of 25% of the
footprint.
Yeah.
Or cache size of 25%.
Yeah.
So that's the threshold you cut off.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? What cost? The size again?
It was 25% of the footprint.
Again, the footprint is the definition of the...
Yeah, I'm just taking it into... Since it's something that we recently use as a definition. For that.
So, I mean, this is good. But I... Okay, so... So when we try to measure correlation... Let me just... So we try to measure correlation and between the elements. So right now, what we see here is how many fall into a certain reuse distance. So we know that most elements or the majority of elements, I don't know how many of them, because that's not really measurable.
Yeah,
but more, I mean, like...
So I think that I'm following just saying. It's good to look at this, but it's actually you pack two pieces of information in the same plot. Mm-hmm. One piece of information is the distance distribution.
Yeah.
Right. You basically have distance. So if I just look at x-axis, ignore y. Okay, ignore y and sum up all the columns into one value. That will be the distance distribution. So what I get from this plot, the distance is somewhere between, you have 0 to, I guess, more than 0. So, interesting. So there is no 0 here.
No, there's no 0.
So all the unique distances
are greater than
540. 540 what?
No, just 40.
The references. The number. Really?
So you need a cache size of at least 40 to have any hits.
It seems.
Unless you are able to filter out the intervening 40.
This is just a unique reuse distance, so I think the frequent reuse distance gets lower.
Well, let's not talk about frequent because we're already struggling with the unique at this point.
Right. Reuse is unique reuse is just a LIU, right?
Yeah.
Why is 40? That bothers me.
The measurements are still in a 512 byte. That's probably something that will definitely affect it.
So at least 5 axis is a way of 4 kilobytes or something like that. What do you say?
So, I mean, if we were also look at it, it's still going for about 4K anyways.
Yeah.
Everything would be about 8 away no matter what.
You mean 5 away?
I'm sorry, I was going to 4K from 512.
8.
Yeah.
But 8 is 8.
No,
you have
mean,
40.
You have 40. So
40.
If you were to do 4K, then it would be 5 away. Because right now it's 40 away at 512. Right?
Yeah.
If it's 40 away
that's
at
only
512, then how many away
that's
is
only
it?
Immediately.
10K, right?
Like, if you're 40 away at 512, how much are we away at 4K?
5.
Yes. Okay, so then
no,
the plot will look similar, but except that everything is shrunk by a factor of 8.
8.
Yeah.
But here's my question. Why there is no reference within that distance?
Within 5?
Yeah.
That's how the trace is. That the blocks are not accessed consecutively. The same block is not accessed consecutively.
Now, what is this trace, by the way?
WDAV or
in the Cambridge trace.
In the Cambridge
trace. Cambridge trace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind
of interesting.
It was just the smallest one.
So, yeah, so to continue my observation here. So, first of all, that gives you the distribution, right? So whether you look forward, whether you look backwards, they're all within the range of 40 to or 50 to 100, roughly. That's what it is, where the frequencies are.
We must be, yes.
Which is nice in the sense that there's obviously this is evidence of a working set, right? So it's not like spread out. So there is a recent access, right? So you expect that access mostly will be within 40 to 100. There is going to be a repeat access.
So a question for you. What is the duration of this trace?
It's the entirety of the WDEV1 trace.
Which is?
About a week.
A week.
If, I mean, we looked up at all of how long each Cambridge trace was run. It was all roughly a week.
And are there reuse distances that are beyond this plot?
This one, if you're using WDEV1, not the WDEV1T, no.
And this specific
this one has
trace,
no threshold, I believe.
This one
has no threshold, so it should be everything.
It's everything. So all reuse distances.
Okay. All unique reuse distances.
So I got a suggestion. So, okay, so here we got the distribution of frequencies of these reuse distances, which is nice. But we want to see if there's a correlation between them. So if you have the same idea, so you can have on the edge access the access number, and then you can have three colors. So you can have one for unique reuse distance, one for reverse unique reuse distance, and one for when they overlap.
I have another one with over the x-axis. I'm sorry, the x-axis is the access number,
mm-hmm.
and the y-axis is actually reverse minus forward for whatever stat we're looking at.
Okay,
so that's also good.
So before we move on to that, I was just describing one observation is within that. So if you have a cache size of 100, whatever it is, you cache most of it, yeah. Right? So for the, and it has a long tail, meaning that there are accesses way out there to the right. And so that means that, I guess there's considering cutoff or anything, but it's not like a diminishing. It's just saying roughly there are some things totally out of the working set.
But at some point it falls off a cliff, which is at 275, the end of this. There's no more.
I'm not sure whether that's because of the cutoff.
He's not using any cutoffs.
Oh, you're not using any.
This one is without a threshold.
Oh, there is no threshold for this
in
one.
This one. I have another one that includes the threshold.
Okay. So if the cache size is for 100, it got almost the majority of the hits, right?
And LRU.
LRU. So that's the working sort of the LRU working set, or the cache flow working set, whatever we're trying to come up with.
Yes.
That's within that range. Right?
Yes.
So that's one message. The second message actually overlap with this is the correlation that we're talking about. And a correlation between forward and reverse, right? And that's a bad news for this one because it's spread out in that square.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the heat dots, right? The red dots all over the place. And they're not falling into this linear line. So that means using unique, checking the history is not going to be a good predictor for the future.
Well, at least you didn't have any red ones up here or
yeah,
within we can ignore the sort of beyond 100 or 120, whatever that number is, because those are pretty dark regions. Let's suppose that we, you know, focus on this particular square, right? The lower left square,
mm-hmm.
right? And now, if you get value, say, that red dot there, around 80 on the x-axis, on the reverse, it was, you know, 40, right? Or vice versa. So if you look at one number, say, because of the whole reason for having a reverse distance, and so that we want to check whether history can tell the future, right? Predictability, right? And in this case, it's really bad.
Well, one thing which you can, though, say is that if your reverse reuse distance is small, within a certain amount, the probability of the forward reuse distance is also going to be within a certain amount. It's not going to be really far out.
Unfortunately, this is not what the data tells, right? So the data tells that it's pretty much smeared out the entire region.
This area, yes.
Right,
so I'm saying that if your reverse is within this, then the forward is also within, is likely to be within, or the other way around, yeah.
So I don't understand very well the correlation part, because, so for me, when we were looking at the, trying to analyze the correlation, and we thought about it, I thought that when you, in a certain access number, you see what's the difference between the unique reuse distance and the reverse unique reuse distance, and if it was close to a number close to zero, then it means that there is some kind of correlation. I mean, this is just an approximation, and it could be done better. But I mean, like
right.
that's more
that
intuitive.
Right.
But I mean, in this case, it's kind of hard, right? Because you can have different access numbers.
Yeah. Like, so just pick any of these numbers. Pick any of these numbers, right? So this green thing means something,
mm-hmm.
right? It means that there's a number like 50 or something. Well, I don't know what the frequency is.
I had a histogram and the numbers went up to about 1600. It was a very weird one though.
Right.
So I don't know if it's.
So let's just pick the red ones, right? So the problem here is, if the reverse, by looking at the history, it's around 80.
Mm-hmm.
It says, it should be 80.
Yeah.
Well, you look at this one, it's, 55.
Right.
Right. So it's not a good predictor, right, in a sense.
You mean it's not an exact predictor?
It's not exact. Well, telling the region is not really helpful, because what this means is mm-hmm. just most of our accesses are, this is their working set.
I understand that. Okay.
But let's say you have, at a certain access, you see a reuse distance a small reuse distance.
Right.
It is likely
it's gonna be, right.
that
yeah.
it will be accessed within a certain bound of time in the future. So
I
this could be spread out all over the place.
Right. I will conclude the following.
Hmm.
I will conclude the following. The following is, there is a distinct working set. And you can use a reverse reuse distance to predict what that working set is about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So 120, whatever, on the y-axis,
yeah.
that's pretty much where it is.
Okay.
And you can sort of, by looking at the past, looking at the past all the time, and be able to say something about the working set size.
Mm-hmm.
And that's given. And once you have the working set, unfortunately, the history is a bad predictor of what would be the value. For example, within that working set, what's the, where it should lie, is very difficult to predict.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I think the correlation for this particular one.
Let's look at another workload,
right?
To
yeah.
see how we do. Do we have other workloads?
No, we still only have the WDEV1 we were trying to...
Oh, okay.
Finish up. We have another version of the correlation, the one that actually is closer to what Ricardo was talking about. If we go back, you're at it actually.
Here?
No, no. Oh, yeah, that should be.
Yes. No.
No, no, no.
Not
the other one.
Let me get rid of
not that
things.
One.
So
the other one. The one that's under that one.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay,
all right.
Go back.
All right, go to the same one, but with the one next to it.
Which is?
CORURD.1. And that one's closer to what Ricardo was asking about. It's a scatter plot that plots the difference between reverse and forward unique reuse distance over
yeah.
the access number.
So most of the differences are clustered within minus 50 to 50.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
So most
interesting
to see the question.
This is a really small trace. I mean, 0 to 10,000.
Yeah,
it's hardly anything.
Like I said, it's the reason why you chose it as the.
And it's one day.
Person.
No.
It's supposed. All of them are still 7 days.
1 week.
Yeah.
Hmm. So this may be a dummy trace, actually. This is just. We shouldn't read too much into this. We should look
right.
at some real trace.
So are we talking about the same trace here?
It's
the
same
trace.
But this is a good predictor. If I got a totally different conclusion here. Why is that?
What do you mean?
This
correlates with the other heat map.
Yeah.
This is the difference between forward and reuse.
What I mean is the predictor is, if you see a spike there, it's just a spike down there. Maybe they're time shifted. So this is the important now. Is there is a time shift here, right? So if you look at anything, right, here, there will be something here. If you look at there, there's something there. I mean, and most of them actually, so does that mean, this is good, does that mean that the heat map is looking at one
exact
individual
point.
Access?
Mm-hmm. Takes one
there
access
is no
point.
Correlation there, but here it shows there is a time map.
Exactly.
And so that means that if you create a heat map of X of T
and xt of t plus delta, whatever that delta is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could actually have a much better correlation. That means the lines would, you're gonna find the linear lines.
So if we split it into more windows,
basically. Right. And which is important. This is information is very important because if that's the case,
then you can assign. You can potentially say that you have a you can look at certain amount of vertices in the past, and you know. That with some certain.
Not clear to me what that means.
Yeah. So this is a time sequence. Time goes right. Time goes on the right. On the
axis number. Yeah.
Right. So.
So, most accesses are clustered between minus 50 and 50, right?
Not accesses. Most of the forward minus reverse we used is
right. Reverse minus forward.
So, this is good news. This is good news. This is, you know, something that this becomes good news now. Because what you use for LRU, say, you know, how do you... If you just look at the history, right? You just look at the history, and if it says that you have a estimator, every time you just access the use distance and so on and so forth, and if somehow it starts to, if the use distances start to get big, right? Or just look at this particular portion. Sorry, I'm actually thinking loud. So along this axis, if you find there are a lot of reuse distances within, you know, it's small, you can pretty much predict that the next one is small. So the correlation is actually...
You're saying the current...
Well,
it seems like most accesses have small reuse distance.
I have a better metric for this, right? So if you measure, and you probably know, if you do autocorrelation, what is autocorrelation? You just look at this sequence, right? Just look at things on above the x-axis, right? So if what is autocorrelation? If this thing's small, what's the likelihood of this thing is small? The next data point is small. If the next data point is small, what's the likelihood of the one after it is going to be small? This is a good predictor because the only problem, only instances that the prediction is wrong is at those phase transitions, right? You see the phase transition there, right? So you know, the things that jumping out, right? So if you actually go this way, you find that, you know, someone was here and then he jumped here, so suddenly the distance becomes larger. That means your prediction is wrong, thinking that it should be small. That's the only instance that it becomes, you know. But after that, after it's large, it remains still going to be large. It's still going to be large. It's still going to be large, and so on and so forth, right? So that's actually a good predictor for that.
This is the difference between the distances. It's not the actual distance, but the distance between the difference between the distances. Forward and reverse.
Mm-hmm. The what?
This is the difference between the distances.
Reverse minus forward.
Oh.
This is reverse minus forward. So anything close to zero means that reverse is similar to forward. Anything far away from zero, either positive or negative, means that the...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Okay, I'm sorry, yeah. So...
Yeah, so what this is saying is that most of the differences, if reverse is different than forward reuse distance, those differences are clustered within a band 100. Of 50 and minus 50.
Right, so 100. If you are a center point in time, you know that if you have at least 100, you're looking at the last 100 axes, you...
Yeah,
but you can be sure that you're gonna find some at most locations.
This is the difference.
This doesn't give you anything.
In that case, I'm sorry, I'm just jumping back and forth. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking loud.
That's all right.
But this is, doesn't give you much information. Remember what we actually seen from the heat map.
Yeah, this is a different way of looking at it.
Different look at it. It's got to be minus 50 to 50. It's the range, it's 100.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Right. What this is saying is that the likelihood of given a small forward reuse distance within a reverse reuse distance within 100, the likelihood of getting a forward reuse distance within 100 is very high.
Yep.
That's what it's saying.
That's the working set.
So if you're looking at the last 100 attices, then most probably you're going to make a good prediction, right?
But there are some outliers which are small, right?
Right.
If you see a reverse reuse distance of something that's very small, it's possible that there are some guys which are not accessed until much later. But that fraction is small. What is the goal of this exercise? I want to go back to that discussion. Why are we doing all of this stuff? So I don't want Stephen to be doing this stuff for no reason. So Stephen, could you tell us? I know you sent me an email about the storyline that you have you had in mind. You wrote me an email. Can we have a discussion about that?
Okay.
Because I don't want us to be, you know, spending a lot of time looking at the data without having a goal.
Okay. Well, obviously we're all looking for phase shifts. When the idea came up to try and get more statistics to try and look for the phase shift itself, and we even have done that before and tried to gather information to do that. During the evaluation of the statistics and getting things for it, the question came up of if the past information that we could have gathered can tell us the future information. Hopefully with the expectation that we can predict funny things, including potentially phase shifts. And so what we're doing here is still looking for that proof of the past correlation with the future.
Okay, that's I don't think that's a story for this paper, because it's, I think in the end the message I'm getting is we had a goal, which is to detect phases. And at some point, we came up with the idea that it would be good to look at all kinds of statistics that will indicate potentially a phase change. But we haven't found any. So that, I mean, that's the story I can create at this point. And I don't think that's going to work for a paper. If you want to write more of a modeling paper, then the story would need to be different. There needs to be motivation, of course, why you would want to do this sort of modeling. And then there needs to be some sort of a conclusion which makes sense and connects to the motivation. I think that's the part we are... it's completely escaped me. I'm not very comfortable doing this sort of open-ended investigation, because we've done these sorts of things in the past with not much success. And it's okay to explore a little bit, but there has to, you know, you have to, at some point you have to say, okay, you know, let's stop this exploration and do something more concrete. Start with an idea, which we can then pursue, maybe using some of this data. But otherwise, I feel like we just end up wasting a lot of time. Just creating more data, looking at it, and coming up with theories. What are your thoughts, Jason?
I agree. I mean, that's, oh, well, first of all, we don't know where we are unless we see the data. So this is very good that we made some progress here so that we see the data.
I think we have lots of metrics, and we can probably write a modeling paper much easier, much more easily given this data.
Well, that modeling paper still has a theme there.
There needs to be some motivation.
Has to have motivations. I mean, you can't just say this is what it is. I mean, there's nothing, you know, what are you going to say about it? The important thing is that, you know, remember what we are trying to do here is, for example, the caching mechanism, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever the new caching mechanism you have in mind, why that particular caching mechanism works for this trace better, for the other trace is not good, right? So initially, we want to get some insight for that, right? For example, you know, you are looking at the, you know, I don't know, with, you know, ARC, you use different kind of list and to try to sort of screen out some of the things, right? So there are some initial guesses that, you know, whether this is going to work because, you know, certain statistics are actually embedded in traces that can reveal whether that actually that problem is manageable or not.
So the objective of the paper will be to, so we have a first set of metrics, which is unique reuse distance, frequent reuse distance. We got a cacheable working set. So with this initial metrics, we can make an evaluation on how the actual trace works. In the sense that, for example, we have a cacheable working set. We know that. Okay, so for caching algorithms, the cache sizes that we need in order to fill the needs of the caching or have a high hit rate will be with these sizes, right? But then, by looking at the correlation, we can determine, for example, why using a filter or a mechanism that will look at the last 100 accesses or the last 200 or certain number of accesses would work in these conditions and when it doesn't. So if you see a high correlation between future and past, then you can say like, okay, well, then by looking at the information of the past, like Lark, for example, is doing, then they make a really good prediction on what to cache next. So they do this. Or by doing an analysis on these type of things, we can even justify the design of the algorithm that we are making.
Okay, so that's nice. I think going in that direction, it would be important then to talk about specific design decisions that we are making and specific data and metrics in the specific workloads to make the connection more concrete. Otherwise, we are not spending our time right. I think we need to, if we go in that direction, we should do it better.
Let me make a proposal here, whether see that can fit in a paper or not. Okay. Now, let's suppose we have several cache algorithms to deal with, right?
We have at least three, which
Lark,
we are looking at right now.
And Sark.
And LRU, maybe.
And LRU. And besides, they are all different kind of parameters, right? So how large is the size? How, you know, what's your cycle threshold and so on and so forth, right? So they are tunable or sometimes automatic, sometimes they actually have to tune it. And they have to really deal with the cache size. You know, we're dealing with this is sort of the 4 gig cache size, 4 meg cache size, I don't know. You know, there's a configuration parameter. So there's a bunch of things there. And we have the traces. Right, so the law of the land at this point is, well, we have the traces. You can't beat the trace, right? Run the trace, fill out these algorithms, and voila, this particular algorithm at this particular configuration works better. And people come up with intuitive explanations, right? It's because we filter out frequent access, because of streaming, we're dealing with this so that we have thresholds so that we can actually avoid workload, sudden changes, phase shifts, whatever it is. So there are people come up with this intuitive ideas. Very good. That's precisely what researchers are for. Now, what we can come up with this is, let's be a little bit more specific. about all those intuitions, whether those intuitions works with this, these, you know, those assumptions work with these traces and why they work with the traces. This is too big a question to ask, but let's zoom down to a smaller scale, right? For example, what's the working set? People define their footprints. And footprints is a lousy way of defining it, because you look at the traces, they're going all over the place, right? That's a working set. And what can you do? As a matter of fact, working set should be shifted by time and should be, you know, it's described in regions, right? You know, there's a spatial and temporal locality that describe what his working set is. And nobody actually seems to be, you know, everybody have the intuitive sense, but in the end, when they talk about cache size or your relative, you know, sizing or cache, it's related to the static, you know, unique number of accesses. That's not what working set is.
Right. I think that is the definition of footprint
footprint
that is being used, which is that all the unique data that you access is the footprint of
right.
the workload.
Right. Yeah.
And then within the duration of whatever the trace is, you're right that you go through different kinds of smaller granularities
right.
and working sets. Right. So that is true. I think the reason why people don't become so specific about individual smaller working sets because then the time dimension comes in.
The time is there.
And then your discussion becomes a lot more complex and that's why they say, okay, well, this is a footprint, and I have a caching algorithm that can deal with the changes. I have a small cache which doesn't contain the entire footprint, right? But it needs to contain all of these changes somehow, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Right.
And this algorithm is a dynamic algorithm. It evicts stuff. It brings in stuff and adapts to these working sets.
So here's the idea that I have for this paper. Long story short, right? We came up with a bunch of metrics, probably more, right? So this is pollution, whatever it is. We come up with metrics. These metrics are not our sort of artificial metrics. So they're statistically actually reviewed, right? They were just deeper inside of, you know, what this reference, what the distance, unique distance, you know, what they mean. And they have direct impact on the cache performance. Now, we have so many traces. As we run all these traces and collect all the statistics, and you can see different traces would reveal what the working set should be, what's the frequency of shifts, you know, if one can capture the phase shifts, what is the predictability about past versus a future. And different traits would have their multidimensional, you know, points somewhere there and indicate it is better, it's more predictable, it's a small size in the working set, and so on and so forth, or less number of phase shifts and so on and so forth. And that one works on the selected cache algorithm that give you that result, right? And if you actually combine this, you will see that this particular algorithm works better for this one, this better for that one, or maybe the configuration should be more adjusted. So that's where the insight would come in. I think if we can actually be able to grasp that and then run them through and saying, what's the result of that? I mean, this is totally different from the SARC paper that you're preparing.
Right.
Just
this
look at this paper.
Another, yeah.
You're preparing the paper and saying, now, let's suppose that your algorithms have configurations. And you say, people will say, my algorithm is better than yours. But you know, I show you the aggregated result. And it's generally better for this set. Well, you can't really say that, because what if my traces, right, happens to be more on that aspect and suddenly show your algorithm is actually 20% worse than the other one? That's simply because that some of the attributes we are capturing, it's indicating that this algorithm is not actually performing better.
Yeah, so in the algorithms field, right, the way they do comparisons is with worst-case analysis,
mm-hmm.
especially for online algorithms like caching.
Yeah.
So when you have a caching algorithm, you can always create an adversarial workload for that specific caching algorithm. You take any caching algorithm.
Yeah.
So then, if you can do that, then the question is, how much bad can my algorithm be in the worst case?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always a worst case adversarial workload. So you take your entire universe of workloads, take the worst possible workload, play it against my algorithm, and I'll get a bad hit ratio, right? So that's the worst case analysis says, well, how much worse can I do for some specific
mm-hmm.
workload?
Mm-hmm.
Now you take another algorithm, you do exactly that. And then you compare whose worst case is better. Right? And this is the kind of worst case analysis that people typically tend to do in the algorithm side.
Right, that doesn't really...
Because you can, given any algorithm, you
given
can always come
algorithm,
up with an adversarial
right.
workload.
Let's just take these three cache algorithm or four cache algorithms that we're dealing with, right, at this point. I mean, you see, that's all over the map, right? And sometimes it's reduced, in general, the evasion rate or whatever, but you compare your algorithm, the SARC and NARC.
Yeah.
They do this, right? And they do this for a reason.
Right.
They do this for a reason. I want to sort of get that reason. I want to see that, say, well, why the prediction there is not necessarily, or as a matter of fact, you have to admit it that there are ways, you know, this is, in general, you say, oh, aggregate, mine is 5% higher. But that doesn't really tell the story, right? It could be actually worse if I actually have more traces that you know bad
this,
for you,
got this, yeah.
Right? No, bad for you. So the thing here is why this particular trace works better, and the algorithm work better in that case for this type of trace. That if I can make analysis and say, oh, that's because this trace is a stream IO or you know some other type of application dominate this web service that dominates this. And look at the traces that are actually going towards that direction. This algorithm is going to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I mean, some conclusion that from that actually would help.
So for the example for the caching paper, is that a good conclusion then to analyze the worst case for us in the?
Oh, you can argue
for the traces, right? Like I mean, if we got. So we can say, like, okay, in general, when we do this average, we get this amount of performance that is that much better from ARC and LARC in these cases, right? But now looking at this at these situations, then we have a set of traces in which we reach a maximum. So we are worst. In the worst case, we are worst by this much percentage, but...
What do you mean worst? You mean
worse in latency.
Are you talking about the real trace or anything factor trace? I can make it as worse as you got 0% caching. You know, everybody will be worse than that.
No, I think you have a good point, which is
right.
that you could compare, you can say that on an average, the latency of SARC is X milliseconds and versus Y milliseconds for ARC. The worst case latency for SARC is X milliseconds, whereas the worst case latency for ARC is Y milliseconds. You could do that kind of comparison. Then you have a real workload for which you're presenting both average performance and worst case performance for all algorithms.
Right.
You could do it that way.
I think
that's more informative than just saying average.
Right.
Okay.
I think we should do that.
Right.
So that at least one good thing came out of this.
Yeah. But in for this paper, I'm hoping this is not going to be enough. I mean, for that paper, it's enough because
mm-hmm.
that's sort of the as I said, law of the land.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you got? Real traces. You run through traces. You report what are the where are your data points are. You know, for all different kind of traces,
mm-hmm.
and you can report because there are so many points that you pick the worst. Pick the average,
mm-hmm.
or even more that people actually do the CDF, right? And that is a quantile. People do quantile,
and then it's doing how much worse and how much, you know, be more specific than just picking 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been done. And that, I think that's the only thing that I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm trying to get a little bit more sort of underneath the surface, because what the statistics actually reveals right now is at least reveal 2 things, right? One is, as I was saying, that one is on the working set. You can see that right there, right? Right there. It's after you're done with this thing, you see the working set. And of course, the time is being filtered out because you're looking at frequency right now, right? You're not all looking at the time. But if it's a time, if the frequency can tell the story, you have a working set right there, right? And there are cases, instances, things actually going to do worse. And instances, for example, even if you have a higher frequency, and that because you don't look at the time series in that plot, the heat map, that means you lose information. You lose information about the relevancy of all the immediate hits and so on and so forth. And so what I'm saying that, for example, if we pick up the what was that called? We call it
pollution.
Pollution or cash flow distance, cash
or
flow
waste.
Side. We
working set.
Cash flow working set, and we talk about evictions
mm.
and the instances of evictions and so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
If we correlate that into the picture, of course, we haven't done there yet. We're not there yet, but with all the statistics, we can actually have a much clearer picture in terms of that. And if we can define later on whatever we come up with, we can define all these dimensions, right?
You know what is another good idea? With all these statistics, we can propose a standard way to evaluate caching algorithms in a more accurate way, so you can make comparisons between them that are more meaningful for papers, because in each and every paper there is an analysis and a way to make evaluations around caching that may be inaccurate sometimes. So, for example, some people use footprints, some other people use some, defined sizes for caching. So what we can propose in this paper is not only with these measurements are making an analysis of the traces and the cache algorithms, we're also proposing a standard way to get some measurements out of the traces so you can make a better evaluation of your cache algorithm and compare it to others.
Good idea.
So that's one. Yeah, that's a good idea. Which is, I want to see if we can extend that a little further to say something like, "Well, here are the metrics that seem valuable for this workloads, and here are the workload specific metrics. And for some workloads, this metric is more important than other workloads. But this metric doesn't matter at all for any workload."
Right.
So if we write a paper along those lines, that can potentially help people design their caching algorithms better. If we can correlate workload specific information with the metrics that we are proposing, then people are saying, oh yeah, for these workloads, which everyone is using to evaluate their caching algorithms, I mean, this sort of stuff, the streaming doesn't even matter. So we shouldn't build it in our caching algorithm, or at least not give it so much importance. So that is another potential storyline, maybe an extension or an alternate to what you just said. So those are reasonable storylines. I think the key would be to start thinking in terms of one of those storylines. Without going blind, I think we've gone enough time blind into this effort without having a good storyline to back up what we are doing. I think my main message would be at this point we have to stop doing that and start thinking about everything that we do in terms of some storyline. And it is okay if that fails. It is okay in the end if that storyline fails, but at least there'll be a good reason for us to be doing this stuff.
I agree.
Stephen, how about these alternate storylines? And you had one storyline in the beginning. How does that fit into these? I think the face detection, which depends on some... if we want to talk about phases as a motivation for this work, we have to motivate why phases are so important. Okay, so that becomes critical. And then the rest, because the rest of it is dependent on that. So I'm not saying that we should discount your storyline altogether. I would say just think more about it and develop it so that it becomes more convincing. So this is the week of the of figuring out, you know, what our goal is. What is it specifically that we are after? What is the data we need to sell the idea and the paper?
Right. So if the
it's a thinking week.
Yeah, it's thinking
as opposed to a data production week. Yeah. Not for you.
Yeah.
No, I know.
It's mostly for Stephen and
I. I think once the storyline is fixed, we can actually look into what metrics you're looking to.
I think we've done some really good groundwork here. I'm not saying that all that we did is not useful. I think we have good groundwork, and this gives us more ideas for what the storyline should be. But we are at a point where we have a point of diminishing returns. If you keep going along this path, the returns are going to start diminishing. So we should just stop here.
I have a little bit different, more a little bit optimistic in this. Because first of all, we look at the data. This is the first time we ever look at the data, right? I mean...
Yeah, but we've looked at so many different kinds of data already. Right?
But this data is very important. Start a review. We already can tell quite a lot more than what we did previously before this. Right. So this is very interesting because I think just trying to get the data a little bit more, we probably would be able just strategic-wise. I'm not talking about, you know, what specifically we're looking for. I think just strategic-wise, just look a little bit more on the data would actually much beneficial because we spend what? Almost two semesters to get here. This is a time we're looking at the data. And we just stop and start to think. I think the data actually, you know, start to can tell us something. We should, at this time, it's the fall season, the autumn. We should actually start bringing, you know, get something really meaningful for the data at this point. And we have all the statistics. You guys already collected the reverse, forward,
you know,
whatever. We have everything.
So what I can suggest is that we already have all these metrics and all these scripts, and we can already generate the graphs for all of these traces. So what I suggested before is like once we already have these graphs and everything, we should just generate all these graphs for all of the traces, and trying to find arguments that we can generate with this analysis, right? So see if there's correlation between the traces. What's the difference in the reuse distances for?
I think that's a good point. I think that needs to happen offline, but not at the meeting. Because at the meeting, we can hardly look at any significant amount of data.
Right, but if we find like a correlation and we show like a set of graphs, like okay, look at these graphs, at this list of graphs, look this value, we found that there's a correlation here, and for this many graphs, I mean, like get to some conclusions that we can actually justify a storyline or some arguments would also be good.
I'm fine with that. I think that data generation and data inspection thing, I just don't want us to get carried away by or drowned in the data without a goal, right? I mean, that's my real concern.
What about the cash flow working size and those events prediction and introducing those things? Because those are dependent on the distances measures that we have. Are we getting there or are we... So you have the data already stored in files, right? The results, right? Now it's just going through the data and finding out those events. Although the phase transition may not be very interesting, but it's interesting in terms of the cache analysis, in terms of the trace analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I agree that we probably, it's a finding, so there's no definitive deadline for that, and it's much more organized if we say we have a storyline that chases the storyline, and that's the statistic we have to get. That's the statistic we have to get, and be more sort of focused in this. But I think in my mind, I'm still having a lot of questions I want to really grab, because we starting from last semester already, we plot out all the metrics we want to get, and this is time I'm getting it.
Yeah.
So this is the time I really want to see what's the result.
Yeah.
Is going to be.
So Stephen, what I would recommend for you, right? I mean, so that you don't end up wasting a lot more time, is to think about the discussions that we've had so far, all of the discussions that we had, some of the storylines that we discussed. Go back to the data that you've generated so far over the past few months, right? Don't attempt at generating new data, like new metrics and stuff like that. If you want to generate data for using the code that you already have, let it run in the background and look at it, you know, once it's ready. I think that's fine. But with your existing data, I would encourage you to think about, okay, what is the paper I can write? What is the story that I can tell? And, you know, spend a lot more of your time thinking about that aspect of your work than our trying to figure out, oh, what's in my data, right? What is the data that I'm missing? How about if I look at the data this other way? And I think you know, given that we've already done it for such a long time, it should, at least the fraction of time you start doing that kind of stuff should start decreasing.
I think if this is the time, you two, I follow you. This is time you should take a more leadership role in terms of trying to get the story and thinking about large, because
yeah.
You know, and Andy can actually do a lot of data analysis and still actually help in terms of finding the metrics and doing something in the background, and so you don't have to sort of all
do all of that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, get Andy's help in
yeah.
running code and generating any data that you might be interested in with your existing code. I think you should start offloading some of that too,
I think.
And
I think
also
so.
The plotting and all that. Let him do it.
Yeah. Andy,
because
can be pretty handy at this point,
mm-hmm.
and knowing all these things and can help tremendously. And also let me just, before I forget, so let me ask this so that I'm making sure. The analysis that you have right here, everything, is that taking care of all this sort of block size issue that we've been discussing for the past two meetings with all those things.
Whether it's page or block,
page,
and
block,
how big it is,
merging, whatever that are we dealing with that or not?
Right now it's at 512, so I don't think I have any merging issues because of that. But I figure I should probably change it over to a 4K block size when we pick it up, especially for the larger traces.
And that
then
would mean,
we will have to do the merging and stuff.
Your transformation of the traces.
I actually advise against it.
Keep it at 512.
The reason for that is just a natural trace.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is. It's different from running the trace against the caching algorithm. Your algorithm has a block size. That's obviously that you have to be able to align the axes to your cache line. And this is a purely whatever this should be, the block size, right?
Yeah, so you're making an analysis of the trace, so it should be the original size of the...
That's my point, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's... if you convert that, that only means that works for that cache. It doesn't work for a cache with a different size.
Yeah.
Hmm. There are some details, which is such as, although the traces are at the 512 byte granularity, if you have always 8 consecutive 512 byte granularity accesses, they're actually a single access that have been broken up for some artificial reason inside some part of the storage stack.
Right.
And that means there is some inefficiencies potentially in how the traces are collected.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And that might, we should at least not present any results that are easily questionable by saying, okay, well, you're assuming that all these 4K accesses are actually 8 accesses, and when that is our, that detail goes away, I mean, all your conclusions fall apart. And I don't think we should be stuck in that kind of a situation.
Right. But what is the block size? How do you know that it's block size control?
No, when the description of the trace, they talk about granularity, I think, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
We don't check
the
size. I mean, as I said, like if you have any doubt, I mean, I've been working this with that those traces since last year, and I worked with Leo with it, and on Python, and then I just translated what I had on Python to C.
That's good. I mean, it's good that you're working with this trace for a while.
So I mean, like we can discuss it, and we can. Just make sure that every doubt
I think that's a very good
is out of your mind. And then,
But because the other trace was wrong.
Right.
So the confidence is low for me.
Okay, exactly. So,
yeah. So it doesn't matter how long you've been working with anything. Because, see, that's a basic understanding of the trace that we cannot go wrong with.
Oh, no. I worked with Leo, and we made sure that it would work for the project, and then...
I haven't discussed this with Leo either.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I have to discuss it with him if you want him to discuss this with
me. No, it's fine. Or... I can perfectly do it myself. It's okay.
I mean, all I'm saying is that we had to be more diligent and open to inspection.
Yeah. No, I mean, sure. We just got to set up a time. That's
it. All right. Let's set up a time to do that. Tell us what you're doing, Ricardo.
No, right now I'm working on the... need to make an analysis of the new SARC on the previous version and see what's the behavior right now. I haven't...
Paper writing?
I haven't moved forward on everything because I've been working on some other stuff. But
Where is paper writing going?
It's my next priority. I mean, I wanted to finish generating this stuff, but I want to be done with one thing and then just focus on the other.
There will always be the next thing to do in terms of more algorithmic work, right? I think it needs to go in parallel. Because if you wait for that to finish, it may not finish, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because every time we see, oh, there is this other problem, maybe the latency has an issue, and we have to go fix it, and then there's this algorithm improvement, we have to go get data for it. I would advise you to work with better time management, which is to say, okay, I'm going to work on the data part of it, all of that in parallel with whatever I'm doing with my paper writing. In fact, you already have enough insights about your algorithm, the motivation, everything. And you have good data to support your algorithm.
Yeah.
Right? So there is no reason for you to not start working on the second part, which is, in the end, the most important, with the paper.
Okay.
Set a deadline for the conference. I mean, that's the way that you're working right now is open-ended because you want to prove it. I think Roger's point is
you already are at a point where you can sell a paper, and now the only thing that can defeat you
is not writing.
What? No. That's a problem. Another thing that can defeat Ricardo at this point?
Somebody else presenting it first.
That's the only thing that can defeat this, because you already have the case to publish the paper. But if someone else publishes that work, then all your work is lost.
Yeah.
That's the you have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not trying to scare you on anything. It's just the reality.
Yeah.
And people are actually looking at all these, and there are probably several groups already looking at this sort of thing. So
yeah, I mean, the fact that the Lark guys already published their algorithm means that there are people who are actively thinking about this. There are people who are thinking about how to reduce the number of writes to Flash. It just needs one switch in their brain to say, okay, you can do more than this, right? And they can do this all of the stuff that you are doing right now.
Okay.
So you have to be careful. I mean, you might do it better than them.
But in the end,
it becomes incremental. Yeah.
Also, you have the sword. You have everything. It's just that I think I like the writing part. I enjoy the writing part. You know, nobody actually wants to write unless they're pushed to the, but when you actually get to the writing part, your logic becomes much more clear. And you know what's needed to be done. For this, I need a motivation. So that has to be set, an experiment. Next week, I need to get that result so that we'll work on the couple of figures in my motivation or whatever there. And then you work out of this particular reason for this, then you actually have to validate or you know whatever that needs to be done. You're more sharpened in terms of the focuses that you dove yourself instead of this, you know, going on.
Yeah.
Writing is really, really good.
Yeah. Okay. We meet on Friday. What are you going to tell us on Friday? What do you want to tell us on Friday?
I wanted to analyze the data for SARC 2 and
SARC 2. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah. Okay. So,
do you have an outline for the paper?
I do have the outline of the paper.
Okay. Let's discuss that.
Okay.
Now let's discuss the outline of the paper.
Okay.
I think that's important. It might fall by the wayside if we don't do that sort of discussion in the meeting.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Good. So we'll meet on Friday then. And
all right.
I'll see you guys in class.
All right. Can we talk for a second? Do you have some time?
Sure.
Okay. We were leaving. Just hold on a second. I'm actually getting
the
right place.
Have you got time to check on my CV?
Yes, I did. A little bit, but not.
I think you guys can work on something.